Hello, my name is Chip Ling, and you are listening to Total EM. This is podcast number 9. Now, if you were listening last week, you heard Jim DeCanto, and you heard him talk about the salad technique. Well, on Twitter, we had a bunch of questions that came up, and we even had some questions coming up while we're recording the conversation on a Skype phone call. So we actually had some feedback live, and we added that in there. Given the relatively recent nature and with the research he had just done, as we talked about in the last podcast, again, if you have no idea what we're talking about, stop this podcast, go back an episode, go back a week to podcast number 8, take a listen to it. It's really worth the time. And it's pretty much all about the salad technique, a little bit about other educational stuff that's well worth the time as well. But really, this is kind of just another fun little tidbit. This is something that Jim DeCanto and I were able to talk a little bit about. He's a really great guy, really someone nice to talk to. After this week's podcast, we're going to also have two other people on. We're going to have Nicholas Crimes, and we're also going to have Jeff Jarvis. They both were also a pleasure to talk to, and their topics are kind of related, so there's a good chance that we will probably mix them in together, not in the same podcast, but their topics may kind of be mixed in there, and so look forward to that. We're also going to be talking about the ATTACH-2 trial, which is ICH, intracerebral hemorrhage and blood pressure management, because that's also been a bit of a hot topic that's been talked about elsewhere. Besides that, we've got some other trials and some other people we hope to be talking to soon. We're going to be booked out basically until I think October will be some episodes that we haven't already recorded or plan to record very soon. So just keep a close eye on this. Like I said, we're going to be updating at least once a week and keep things going there. Otherwise, without further ado, let's actually go into our conversation with Jim DeCanto. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Chip. Nice to meet you. I'm an anesthesiologist in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I've been in practice for 20 years as of this year in anesthesia, but I've been getting connected with the foam community since about 2011. Through the foam community and my relationship with airway educators like Rich Levitan, his Twitter handle is at AirwayCam. I'm sure everybody knows that. I've gotten an interesting view into what the major issues are for emergency medicine, pre-hospital airway management. Although I don't do emergency medicine airways, I don't do pre-hospital airway management. As an educator myself, I became interested in what the major problems are that they talk about, but they don't seem to have any solutions. So that kind of dovetails into how I created a simulator in my simulation lab to create the problem and then began to create techniques to solve the problem very easily with the least number of tools necessary with the least amount of time to get the job done. So that's kind of the story about how I got connected with foam and how I created the SALAD system and the SALAD techniques.
And SALAD stands for suction-assisted laryngoscopy and airway decontamination, correct?
Right. As an educator, we don't have an anesthesia residency, but we have an internal medicine residency at my hospital. They have a lot of goals that they have trouble reaching without rotating with specialists like myself. One of the first things I've noticed about novice laryngoscopists is they have a devil of a time actually just getting the laryngoscope into the mouth in the proper position to control the tongue. And when I considered that the novice laryngoscopists have such a problem just getting the laryngoscope in the mouth, and we are talking about a problem with airway contamination, I said, well, gosh, why don't we just use the suction catheter creatively to clear the oropharynx and then use that like a huge tongue depressor to help us get the laryngoscope in the mouth, control the tongue during laryngoscopy, and then continue to use the suction throughout the intubation attempt by placing it into the esophagus. So that's the basis of the SALAD technique itself, is from the very, very, very beginning, you hold the suction in your right hand like you're holding the laryngoscope handle itself, so that you can use the suction catheter to distract the lower jaw and control the tongue to get the laryngoscopal blade into the mouth on the first try with the least amount of time.
Perfect. I like that. That's very concise and very good intro. And there's a lot of videos that you have out there. In fact, I was just watching a quick 2-minute one before we got started here. Very basic, but very easy to understand concept. I think the hard part is, like you said, there's not really many ways to simulate it. And that's been one of, I think, your big projects has been trying to get airway mannequins that can actually do what we need to practice this appropriately.
That's exactly right. So I started this project as an open source project in the month of October at the World EMS Expo. NASCO is coming out with a NASCO brand salad simulator. I'm in on the ground floor and creating that with them. I partnered with them to create it. But my original idea and my idea moving forward is that this is an open source project. You can take the equipment that you own right now and adapt it to do this. If you don't want to mess up your existing stuff, you can buy relatively inexpensively this simulator from NASCO. I'm not trying to, I wouldn't call this a conflict of interest. I would call this just a friendly sharing of, you know, of information to you. You know, so place your calls now, folks. I'm just joking.
actually, that's an important point. Real quick, I don't have any disclosures. I don't have any financial interest in any of this stuff. Is there anything you need to disclose?
Well, NASCO is going to make a mannequin, and I'm part of that project. And in the very near future, probably around the time of ASAP, possibly at the World EMS Expo, the SCOR Corporation, SSCOR, is releasing a suction catheter with my name on it. And it's a modified high-D suction catheter, which, in my opinion, improves on the already awesome high-D products. So I do have a relationship with a couple companies now that grew out of just curiosity and my willingness to improve existing equipment.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you for now that we got that out of the way. Now we can talk about the fun stuff. So I guess real quick, we had a couple of questions from Twitter when we announced that we were going to talk to you today. So I figured we can go through those real quick.
Okay.
Our first person is
Felipe Urdaneta. Okay. He's down in Gainesville, Florida. I know him well. He's part of the Society for Airway Management. As a plug for the Society for Airway Management annual meeting, where it's coming up in about 3 weeks in September in Atlanta, Georgia. So I encourage especially anybody who lives in the Atlanta, Georgia area who's in EMS to consider, I believe there are discounted rates for pre-hospital providers. But take a look at the website for the Society for Airway Management. Anyway, sorry, I guess I have a lot of interests here. Okay, so Felipe's first questions. Are quantitative studies on salad in the making? I want to know what degree supraglottic airways protect against aspiration. And his second question, which dovetails with that, is I want to know what volume of aspirate overwhelms a first generation and second generation supraglottic airway. So in answer to Felipe's first question, yesterday I assembled 6 people in the airway lab and we tested on a TrueCore mannequin several supraglottic airways with a standardized volume of simulated airway contaminant or sac. It's my way of calling it artificial vomit. Sac. We used 300 milliliters of sac in each test on each of these supraglottic airways. And the pump was calibrated to deliver approximately 100 milliliters of sac per second. So we actually performed one of these experiments yesterday and have some very interesting results. And my goal would be to test this on 3 other airway mannequins, which are modified to do the salad. We're getting some interesting results here. I can share a few of them, but I can't share them all. And he wants to know what volume of aspirate will overwhelm these airways. That is actually a separate question from what we asked yesterday. We asked the following question yesterday. We said to ourselves, all right, we're going to put 300 milliliters of simulated airway contaminant through this mannequin. The decision to utilize 300 milliliters as the test volume for the simulated airway contaminant in this experiment was made from my observation that a standard kidney basin, which is used as an emesis basin in many cases during procedures under regional anesthesia, such as a C-section, the patient will typically vomit up about two-thirds of the kidney basin if they've got quite a bit of intragastric volume. So that was a clinical observation of mine, that that's about the level at which I've seen moms vomit up into in these kidney basins. So that was a that's how I derived 300 milliliters. So in essence, I'm really kind of looking at the problem of C-sections in that one. What we did yesterday was modify the TrueCore mannequin, which is a many of us know is a mannequin derived from the CAT scan of a 16-year-old female. So we were using size 3 airway devices, size 3 King laryngeal tube, size 3 laryngeal masks of various types, including a size 3 eye gel. And what we would do is with the cuffed airway devices, we'd place them into the mannequin, use a cuff manometer to set the cuff pressure to 60 centimeters of water, the maximum pressure recommended for these devices. And then we had a pit crew set up so that we could very easily run the 300 milliliters of sac through the esophagus of the mannequin into the pharynx. And we would observe in the lungs of the mannequin the collected volume. And I replaced the lungs with these small sputum traps that are used during bronchoscopy that are graduated. They're small 80 milliliter, 70 milliliter, or 80 milliliter trap containers for catching specimens during bronchoscopy or other procedures. So we could accurately measure what goes into the lungs. And so the goal of the experiment really was to determine, when you run 300 milliliters over 2 seconds or 2.5 seconds into this mannequin, how much gets past the supraglottic airway and into the lungs. That's the only thing that I really cared about in this experiment. If an airway had a drainage port like the King LTSD does, the iGel, the ProSeal, the Supreme, not the ProSeal, but there's a new one called the Protector, which looks like a ProSeal, we would try to gather whatever was coming out that port and measure that as well. So we've got a lot of data here. We did about 10 runs per airway, and what we discovered was something very interesting in it. You have to realize that this is a preliminary test on one mannequin. So we anticipate there's going to be possibly other results in other mannequins, but we need to test other mannequins to make a decision. The experiment that Felipe is asking about is how much is going to overwhelm a supraglottic airway. That's a separate experiment. In other words, in order to do that, in lieu of using 300 milliliters as a set test volume, I would take a Toomey syringe with, say, 50 cc's, and I'd repeat the experiment with 50 cc's just with a Toomey syringe, or I'd try 20. In other words, he's asking a different research question, and I'm not so sure there is an answer to that, but there's absolutely no reason not to try to do it. And one of the things I hope to do with this podcast is to get people interested in doing this on their own. I don't really consider myself to be the authority or expert on this. I'm simply the only guy doing this right now.
Well, but an important person to be doing it, because we definitely, you actually, I think, have a little 30-minute clip on Vimeo about how to kind of set up your own system.
Yeah, right.
And so we'll try and get that tied into the podcast as well, so people can watch that video and see how they can do this with their own mannequins.
Yeah, most certainly. And I know that there are those within the pre-hospital community who would need to do this kind of research on their own, because they need to give relevant and decent information to their organization, to their medical directors, to make decisions as to what are we going to invest in training and in time and money in supraglottic airways, for instance, or in suction equipment, or in video laryngoscopy. Obviously, the scope of our talk today is more related to salad.
Yes. And so with that, we're ready for the second question, I believe, with Gavin Denton.
Yep, we got Gavin here. He says, is there a way to measure the effect of a supraglottic airway combined with a fine bore nasal gastric tube to empty the stomach? I do believe that there is, and well, that would require me to repeat the experiment with putting the nasogastric tube into the esophagus So in other words, the two questions here we have from Felipe and Gavin are asking us essentially to repeat the experiment with different conditions. What I'm going to tell you based upon what I've seen in the experiments, and I've done this before the experiment yesterday, is that if there is a large mass flow of a large fluid volume through the esophagus in simulation, what will happen is that whatever is in the way of that flow of airway contaminant, the esophagus will just dilate around it to get the stuff out of the pharynx and out of the mouth and out of the floor. So a small fine bore nasal gastric tube is going to have essentially no effect on mass vomiting, but it may assist with small micro aspirations. And if I had to come up with a really intelligent statement about the current design and supraglottic airways with these channels that are in them, such as the King tube, the iGel, the Supreme, the LMA Protector, which is a new product, and the Aura Gain and the AirQ Blocker, these channels are going to be effective with very small passive amounts of regurgitated material. In a mass vomiting situation, these things are vestigial. They don't really amount to much. The best possible thing that can happen during regurgitation of large amounts of material is that the material is able to actually get around the supraglottic airway posteriorly and flow out of the mouth. So this is my observation in simulation. I don't have a lot of experience with this in real life, thank God. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But in simulation, the mask, whatever it is, must get the hell out of the way to let the stuff out of the mouth. These drainage ports are too small. They're not. We're not talking about the 10 ET tube that my colleague tweeted out a few days ago. This is not a 10.0 ET tube. These things are small. These things are like 5.0 or smaller ET tubes based upon their channel size, maybe even smaller. It's just going to basically, the airway contaminant is simply going to find a way out.
No, I think that's a good point. That actually may tie into, I had a question for you before Sure. We start talking about the experiment itself. So I kind of briefly mentioned this to you the other day. Talking about those large volume episodes of vomiting, especially when they're recurring, it seems like they'll never end, and you're trying to get the airway controlled because they're unresponsive. With what you have, say you're a department that does not have specialized tools, obviously the Yankauer, it's not going to get enough out, not in these large volumes. I've seen people use the straight suction tubing. They just don't put anything on the end of it, and they just go right in.
Right.
Is there any, and that seems to pick up quite a bit, but is there anything that you have noticed works well, or is anything you'd specifically recommend in that kind of situation where you don't even have an airway yet? You're trying to clear it out enough just so you can.
Well, let me just say that if I were in the situation, which all I had was a hospital-issued Yankauer, and just to tell you what the Yankauer is it is known as a tonsil suction for a very good reason. It's a suction catheter which is designed to be used during mucosal surgery, in which you remove something that can bleed a lot, and you don't want the suction to pull any of the abraded surface into the nozzle itself so as to cause the cut surface to re-bleed. So the openings are, I used I don't remember who gave me the number, but it's 0.015 inch aperture opening on some of these models of Yankauers. Very, very, very small for the ones used for surgery. It'll take care of liquid, it'll take care of blood, but if you have a clot, it'll occlude. If you have any material, it will occlude. If I were stuck with just that and I'm facing a situation like you are describing, I think using the suction tubing itself makes a lot of sense, although you don't have any control over it. So let me ask you this, Chip, what do you have available in your airway bag that you could use to control the flexible suction tubing?
Ooh, so are you talking about like MacGyvering something or?
You may need to MacGyver something. If you don't have the tools and you know what the solution is, but you can't control the tool, how do you garner control over the flexible suction hose. And I'm not going to advocate that anybody does this. I don't want to give medical advice, okay?
Right, we're just right. Gonna talk this is theoretical.
It's completely theoretical, and I want you guys to try this in simulation. Please don't go out and do something wacky based on this discussion. Okay. But if you were to secure a metallic malleable tracheal tube stylet to the side of the suction hose, and this is not necessarily my idea. I think somebody else gave me this idea. Then you can potentially control the tip of the suction hose, right? I mean, there you have it. So would it not be better for you to be prepared with low-cost and reasonable rigid suction catheters rather than to rely on something that has a patent date back in the 1917-1918 region of time that was designed for oral pharyngeal surgery, possibly done on the kitchen table at that time in human history?
Very, very nice point. So now would... In theory, again, this is theory, everyone. Don't go try this at home yet. Would you tape it to the...
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's all you have, right?
Right.
Okay, so you're one of the paramedics who was with me yesterday was describing to me managing a patient on the floor of a nursing home, and there's an endless stream of airway contaminant which contained blood and vomit coming out of this patient's mouth. And he's intubating this patient on the floor, and he's got a grade 3 view. And this is what he's dealing with. I don't remember how he told me he managed the airway, but he got it. But it was this is one of the trainers for a pre-hospital organization. So this guy's at the top of his game. He thinks about this stuff all the time. And also he's been thinking about the whole salad thing as well. He may have used a salad technique to handle it. I forgot what he told me. So you've got a patient that you can't ramp. You can't position them.
Right, right.
You've got this endless stream of airway contaminant. One thing I'm going to say that you should listen to me is don't leave the suction back in the ambulance. Right?
Right.
Okay. So if I had to describe the entire Ducanto's modification to airway management doctrine or teachings, is that there's two sides of the coin to airway management. There's ventilation and there's airway decontamination. Pre-hospital providers know more about this than most physicians because by the time patients reach the operating room for surgery, they've already thrown up on everyone else. They're done throwing up. And in addition to that, anesthesiologists do nothing but sit around and think about what drug and what dose to give. So we show a type of artistry that most other specialties can't show when it comes to giving medicines. So we deeply anesthetize our patients before we touch their airways, and that's why they don't barf in our hands like they do in other situations like critical care or emergency medicine. This is my opinion, of course. I can't prove anything that I've just said when it comes to that, but I'm telling you that this is just the way it is. I know what drug to give in which situation, and if I know the blood pressure will fall with it, I'll administer a vasoactive substance along with the induction agent so the blood pressure doesn't fall. You get my drift?
Oh, yes. To put it nicely is that you have a lot of finesse and artwork, and
yes.
Our reality is is just hell.
Right. Yeah.
So, no, that's perfect.
We got something from ketamine here.
Yes. Men cannot keep himself away.
Where is he? Okay. I didn't get this on the feed. Hold on here. Let me see.
So, he just asked you, would you please ask Jim what he would invent if he had unlimited resources?
Oh, God, come on, really? Okay. Okay.
And men with the most vague question.
All right, okay, this is great. This is it, men. Are you ready for this, buddy? This is the thing. What we need to create is is it for you? Is it for you pre-hospital guys or for the in-hospital guys? If it's for pre-hospital, what you need is a system that can work both as suction and as a ventilation system that has a built-in oxygen concentrator, so you no longer need to rely on tanks at all. You have a ventilation system that will ventilate the patient, provide an oxygen concentration. I think the U.S. military has something like this already. It's built into the stretcher. But basically, the compressor is your suction. You know, you do airway decontaminate. The compressor can also power the oxygen concentrator. You might have a small tank of a reservoir to do your high-flow oxygenation prior to induction or during initial resuscitation, but after you secure that airway, you now need to go into the business of long-term ventilation, and you're not going to need 100% FiO2 on most people, so you won't have to run 15 liters per minute through the ventilator. You'll need to run 1 liter per minute. You know what I mean?
Nice. Yes.
Anyways, that's an out of the blue question there, man.
That wraps up the second part of our conversation with Jim DeCanto. Again, really nice to be able to talk to him. And if you also are interested in joining on the show, whether to be a guest speaker, or if you have a specific paper you want to go over, or you have anything else you can think of that would warrant being on the show, we'd be happy to have you. Just send us a message. You can get a hold of us on Twitter, TheTotalEM, that's us, or you can go to TotalEM.org. You can contact us through Facebook, Twitter, email, whatever the case may be. It's pretty easy to find us as long as you look for TotalEM. Otherwise, we are going to wrap things up here for this time. Again, we have a lot of great shows coming up. We have a lot of great content coming up. So if you have any questions, think of anything else, get a hold of us either on Twitter, leave a comment on the site, whatever you want to do, whatever works best for you. But until then, please continue to provide total care everywhere.